Bonjour, bonsoir, dear friends. This is JCB Live Happy Hours. Another exceptional day in the wine country. Today, we're going to focus on one of the most important topics of all time, preserving our planet. Remember, we borrow the land from our children. This is essential that we all reduce, reuse, and recycle. The world is a fabulous place, and it has to continue as such, and we need to leave it in a better way than we found it. This is why I have a very unique guest today. His name is Brian Maloney. I met Brian in 2003. I was so fortunate. He was a young man, graduated from UC Davis, of course, the very best schools for learning everything about wine. And we hit it off immensely. And over the last 17 years, he's been leading the winemaking of Deloche and recently as well, the fantastic Chateau Buena Vista Winery. I'm very pleased to welcome a fifth generation Californian from Sonoma County. Brian, please join us.
Thank you, John Charles.
How are you?
Doing well.
Great to see you. And it's so exciting because Brian as well knows how to make bubbles. So Brian, the tradition wants it that we, please have a seat and make yourself comfortable. So Brian, how does it feel to be a true Californian?
It feels great. It feels like I had a chance to grow up in one of the great places in the world, in a beautiful place, and to be able to work with the grapes from where I grew up is one of the, I think, crowning parts of my life in a lot of ways.
Well, what made you want to go into wine? Because your family has animals at home as well. It's a beautiful farm, right?
Yeah, it is. It's a beautiful place. And, you know, it's kind of a funny story. I grew up, my mom's family comes from the wine business, from vineyards and wineries. My dad's family, though, that's where I grew up, on the family ranch. That's been in the family since 1860s. And so I grew up with livestock.
So 1860, really, the beginning of what California is about.
Right at the start. In fact, the family, the very first migrant to the United States in my family, a gentleman named Adolf Gehrke coming over from Germany. He actually settled the next creek over from where the Count of Buena Vista started his winery. Right around the same time, too, 1858-1856 time period.
So, and where did he come from originally?
He came from the Rhineland, I believe the Hesse state. If I remember correctly,
maybe Rhineland. There's some good wines too.
You know, we've talked about Riesling in the past, but yeah, maybe.
That's amazing to be, you know, so many generations in California. Before we dive into the wine, what do you think about the evolution of this beautiful state?
Well, I think it's fantastic what's been happening in the last, you know, 30, 40 years when we talk about agriculture and wine, and really this sense of, you know, celebrating all the different terroirs that California has to offer. Growing up in Sonoma County, very, very early on, you realize that it is a kind of a microcosm of the world, because you only have to drive a few miles or hike up a hill and all of a sudden you're in a different climate. You're in a different terrain. You can go from the, you know, kind of the rolling hills of Petaluma to the magnificent redwoods in the northwestern corner of the of the county to really what we see right on the kind of the Napa-Sonoma line, these really craggy hillsides and canyons that poke out. And so it's fantastic to live in such a place where we celebrate all that diversity and also preserve it, which I think is one of the great things California has been a leader on for the last, you know, generation.
That's right. And multi, you know, agricultural projects, because your family grows unbelievable animals as well. So maybe you want to touch on
that. So, you know, part of that generation of growing up, we not only did we participate in 4-H, but also on a commercial level, have raised cattle and sheep for market, as well as chickens and eggs and things like that. You know, growing up in high school, I actually worked on a neighbor's dairy. That's where I really, you know, had to appreciate what hard work goes into, you know, any type of agricultural enterprise. It is a 365-day-a-year effort that goes out. And it starts, you know, very early in the morning. I remember waking up on weekends at 2 a.m. in order to start bringing the cows in to get milked. And then, you know, having that, you know, very short break in the morning to kind of rest before you started at 2 p.m., bringing those cows back in to get milked again. So it's a 24-hour cycle. Wow. It's a lot of work.
So how do we go from, I know someone who went from water to wine.
Yes.
You went from milk to wine. Well, how did that happen?
I will be honest, by my my last year in high school and transitioning into college, I was pretty tired of getting up early in the morning, 365 days a year.
Did you get to touch?
Oh, yes. I've milked many a cow. It takes a lot of practice to get it right. But
well, I've always heard your hands are very soft from Aaron. So something must have happened during those years of being the milkman.
Techniques are perfected. That's all I'm going to say.
I'm jealous. I should have spent a lot more time in the farm.
So, yeah. So anyways, I honestly was ready for a transition. I love agriculture, though. I love the place where I'm from. I love all these different parts of Sonoma and beyond. And so when I had the chance to go to UC Davis, that's when I really became inspired by stories from my grandmother. Her family. Yeah. So my great-grandfather, Domenico Barberos, actually, he came over from a little town on the border between Liguria and Piedmont called Mirialdo. And his family had been in wine and vineyards over there. And when he came to the United States around 1905, he purchased, along with one of his brothers, a property up in Calistoga. That's where they planted vineyard.
Isn't it where your house is today?
It's very close to it, yes. Very close. And so they started a winery. In fact, it's one of those ghost wineries of the Napa Valley. Unfortunately, his story isn't quite as grand as the Chateau Buena Vista. It ended mostly with, tax agents coming in, raiding the property and, you know, fining him for...
We've heard those stories as well.
During Prohibition.
Well, let's have a toast to the great dynasty. And it's amazing in life, you know, we often follow what our grandparents have done. Maybe jumps a generation because your brother deals with the beef and the cows and the lamb and has a great business as well. Does the
Kevin does a fantastic job with Fallon Hills. He is showing him and my dad market the primarily at farmers markets in San Francisco, Marin County, and the East Bay. But also, you know, supplies a few smaller restaurants. And then we've had a tremendous opportunity to have him come to all sorts of events here at the wineries, and focus on these whole animal type barbecues, which are really special. And I mean, it's such a celebration when you're able to do something like
that. Well, and his specialty, Kevin, is the pig roast. So we will show you at some stage how we do a pig roast from the beginning to the end, because this is really fantastic. And our good friend, Charlie Palmer, you've participated to the judging of this competition where Deloach won many times, is doing Pigs and Pinot. So another great event. So Brian, we're going to dive more maybe into the world of agriculture and that great land. You used the word named terroir.
Yes.
What is your definition as a California born, I want to state, loving Burgundy and being a very true Burgundian as well? In many ways, you are. What is your definition of terroir?
So my definition of terroir, you have to start with, you know, the root of the word. It is land, right? It is the place. And it is all the different weather effects. But I think an important part of terroir that often gets missed is the history and the people that go along with it.
Yeah.
Because it's that influence to the terroir that really defines so much qualitatively what we see coming out of, whether it's a field, a pasture where you're raising lamb, or whether it's a vineyard or a hillside where you're picking grapes from. All those aspects of terroir, you can't undercut the soil, you can't undercut the weather and the climate and the influence of the aspect. But the person who laid that out, the people and the animals and all the ecosystem that goes into it matters. And most importantly to me, the history matters.
Mm-hmm.
Because how that land has been taken care of or not taken care of dramatically influences the terroir at any given point in time. So while we often think of terroir as just being a single slice and it being immutable, and in fact, terroirs are incredibly affected by the history of what has happened in that place. And I think you see that in Burgundy as well,
Those
terroirs in some cases were damaged because of poor maintenance in the 1960s and 70s, and how some terroirs were always great because they had that history of people taking care and paying attention to all the little details to make sure only healthy things were happening.
Essential, for sure. Now, when you talk about terroir, how do you take into account the practices that are impacting that terroir? Like, of course, what you believe in is organic and biodynamic farming.
Yes. I mean, when you look at, you know, the practices, you know, I think this wine right here, actually, the Blanc de Noir that we're enjoying, the 2016 is a great example of how multiple generations and how that impacts it. You have a family, the Heinz family out in Occidental, who've been farming this land for 100+ years.
Yes.
And they've had to transition as economies have changed from grapes originally to apples and then back to grapes. And all along the way, every step that they've taken has been about preserving that soil, preserving the water, keeping the magnificent redwoods that help protect their source of water on their property intact. And then changing as farming has become more, you know, intelligent, more water wise, as our machines have become gentler, implementing those changes into their vineyards so that Charlie and his family aren't just farming for the next 15, 20 years. They're farming for his grandchildren.
That's the beauty of it. Multi-generational.
Yes.
So, dear friends, we are enjoying an amazing wine. And I must say, this was a dream of ours at Deloge Vineyards when we all came in. Because as I said, to introduce Brian, we've been together for 17 years. Brian started a week before we took over the winery. Yes. And this was amazing because at that time we discussed creating a magnetic sparkling wine in that very specific area. I don't think we were ready at the time. And we waited and we waited and we waited. And 2016 is obviously one of the first expression of what we call the Deloge Royale. And you can see this packaging is one of my favorite. So what I wanted here is to design a take on the French King logo. As you can see from Louis XIV standpoint, you have the beautiful royal blue, you have the fleur de lis, you have the burgundy deep red color matched by, of course, the foil. But very importantly, you have all those fleurs de lis all around. That is the logo of the Deloge. So we really wanted to go full circle. And this is very important in what Brian just mentioned is, you know, from the beginning, the land all the way to the end of that final beautiful taste that we have and the execution of wholeness. So, Brian, tell us a little bit about what you were looking for in that wine.
Well, what I found, and I think you find in sparkling wines coming out of the Green Valley, is a beautiful fruit approach, but also that retention of acidity. Charlie, we're very lucky, has planted one of the few Champagne clones that's available in California. And so we're able to work with that. He has incredibly healthy fruit because he is very diligent about making sure that he's opening up those canopies, using those techniques that we all know about in order to make high quality wine. But then it is that terroir, it is that gold-rich soil, that very, very fine soil that doesn't put on the nutrients, helps retain beautiful acidity throughout the growing season. And also, just as it's starting to turn color, just as we're starting to see those berries turn purple, it gets this kind of mix of apple-strawberry flavor coming out. And that, to me, is beautiful when you're talking about Blanc de Noirs. I think with Pinot Noir-based sparkling wines, you do want to start seeing that red fruit come out in the wine.
Absolutely.
And you see that here. You don't want to mistake it for a Blanc de Blanc. That is a different flavor.
Makes me think of some of the best, you know, obviously, JCB number 13 we make in Burgundy or even Gala Champagne Rosé. Really up to that vein. Brian, explain to us the process, your thinking process. What happens in your mind when you see a vineyard, you think of a wine, we discuss it, and you create it?
Well, you know, I think the way you put it is when you see a vineyard, the vineyard itself often inspires what the wine is going to be. What is that slope? What is that soil? And it takes some time walking through the place in order to kind of come to grips with what am I getting out of this? I think of the contrast between two great vineyards we work with, the Sonoma Stage Vineyard out in Petaluma and then the Mabaroshi Vineyard over in Sebastopol.
Of course.
And both are very cold sites. If you were just to look at weather data, they'd be very, very similar. But when you start looking at the soils and you start seeing these heavier, thicker soils down at Sonoma Stage, and you see these really light, very thin soils at Mabaroshi, you start to see how the personality of those wines come from the soil itself, how you have this kind of, you know, turmoil and this density to that Sonoma Stage wine, where with Mabaroshi, you have an ethereality, a lightness, and also just
like the term ethereality.
Yeah. Just a beauty. And so they're very distinctly different wines. And it comes from getting to know those places. Mm-hmm. And so when we bring it into the winery, often we see in the fermentation very early on that that personality really starts to rise out. And that's when it's great to have you come into the cellar and taste through our ferments and start talking about the directions we see things going, whether as vineyard designates or whether as components for the more stylized wines, the JCBs.
Well, for sure. And you explain from the source. Very interesting, because when you talk about the chef who creates a dish and an amazing recipe, he starts as well, often from the garden or from, you know, the animal he sees. This could be a duck. It could be poultry. It could be a fish. Now, for you, in the creative process, describe what goes on in your mind as you create wines. And you make a lot of fantastic small lots wine. What goes on in your head as far as you imagining people enjoying it or moments or emotion? What are you trying to achieve as a creator?
Well, when I'm working with wine, so much of it is actually memories that come back. So some of it is the memory of the site when I'm tasting that wine, but some of it's memories of other wines I've had before. Whether, for example, the Vanderkamp Vineyard, another Pinot Noir vineyard we work with. Whenever I taste that wine, I always, for whatever reason, I think of Barolo. I think of Nebbiolo. I think of these, you know.
They have a lot in common, for sure, with Pinot.
Yeah, they do. And just the textures and the aromatics. And so that becomes part of the inspiration of where I see that wine going. But I also think of the people that I work with as well, and especially the growers. And, you know, what is their personality? How does this come out into the wine? And is it sometimes they're very much in tune, and sometimes they're incredibly contrasting, and it makes you wonder how the two of them became. But often, you know, those contrasting elements make things more interesting. And so it's those memories are a big part of when I sit down with a glass, what I'm thinking about. I have to say that, you know, so often it isn't a single pass that we go through with our wines. Mm-hmm. In fact, when we talk about things like our OFS, it is almost always multiple passes going through, thinking about it, coming back to it.
OFS?
Our finest selection.
Oh, yeah. I see.
Yes.
This must be something unique.
There's a story itself fucking standing.
Ooh, I like it. That even better.
I think you know that story better than I.
Well, maybe we should try the next wine, because I really want to discuss, Brian, what really inspires you in terms of in the creative process and in general? I mean, a young man, you started, how old were you when you started?
Well, at Deloche, I was 21.
Can you imagine? And today, you're director of winemaking of the entire Sonoma. And you make a lot of great Napa wines as well. So how does it feel?
It's humbling when I walk through some of these vineyards and see the wines I've made. It's almost, I think anytime you look back at what you've done, you're not always sure how you've gotten there, other than a lot of work and a lot of people along the way that help you out.
But that's an amazing path that you've had.
Well, thank you.
From being a trainee to now running the show, and the show of two major iconic wineries, including as well JCB, which is the third.
Yes.
So how does it feel?
Well, it feels fantastic. I'm not one to, you know, sit on my laurels, though.
That's right.
It's something that it's constantly building. And I think, you know, you just poured a wine that's part of what we're building, trying to spread a message, but also a quality level out there that I think is incredibly important.
And so tell
while
us
I'm
about
proud
it.
Of what we've done, I know that we are just beginning.
Oh, we've only done, as I always say to all of us, the obvious. But before we go to the wine, I'd like you to send a message, Brian, an inspirational message to all the people who want to be like you. Because I need to tell you, it's very rare. 21 years old, Brian was 24. We gave him the key of the Loach to really create the dream. And then we bought Buena Vista. We gave them the other keys of the oldest winery in California. And then together we created the JCB that are many of them from Sonoma and Russian River and many other parts. So what message would you want to send to all the people who want to be like you or who want to have the same path?
Yeah, I would say that anyone, if you're interested in wine or if you're interested in anything that, you know, starts at a natural place, get in touch with where that place is. And put the work in, put the time in, get to know it, get to know the people around it, and follow that path. You'll find it very rewarding. And it may take you on twists and turns that you don't expect. I, I don't know if I expected to be at Deloche after 17 years. I like to joke that I started as a temp and I'm still waiting to get that.
Well, I think you Deloche when I missed that JCB. I think that's a lot of things.
It's very much, I think, it's a matter of patience and letting the forces around you guide you is incredibly important. And that's why I say get to know the place that where it's coming from. Because if you don't get to know that place, then you're not going to understand it. And get to know the people around it. Because if you don't know those people, then you don't know what you're missing.
I would add as well, be humble, because Brian is humble always to his last wine. As a chef, we got to be humble to the last plate we've delivered into the dining room. So very important. Brian as well, who do you think makes you who you are? I know you have a beautiful wife.
Yes.
And I know very well.
Well, I would
say a fabulous mom and dad.
My mom in particular has had a tremendous amount of effect on me and just how I see things and perceive things and how I interact with people. My dad in many ways has set me on the path. He's kind of been more of this direction or that direction and providing motivation. But my mom has very much, I think, had more of an effect on my critical thinking and the way I interact with individuals. So yeah. I'm obviously a component of both of them. But I would say there's a certain amount of thought process. I see a similarity between my mom and myself.
So how are you?
I will say though, my wife, when it comes down to my wines and who I want to impress with my wines, it is my wife.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
She knows a lot about wine. She, having been in the wine world for 20 years as well.
And she has such a better palate than mine.
Well, that's very kind of you to say. And I'm not surprised. Women are the best wine tasters. Now, how are you using what you learned from your parents with your own kids?
Well, I think the biggest thing I've learned, I'm the fifth of six. And I think a lot of people, especially when it's just one child or two childs or they're the oldest, they expect a certain amount of attention being played. Well, as a fifth of six, I have to be honest that there was a lack of attention in many things that I did. And so there's a certain amount of independence I was allowed to develop very early on. And I think that has been great for me because of the imagination that starts to develop because of that, the self-sufficiency that develops from that is important. And so I've tried to instill that in my children as well, letting them get themselves into a little bit of trouble, letting them just sit and think and have their stories. I think that's how you end up becoming more dynamic as an individual, as opposed to having that rigorous structure at all moments.
So you're more of a bohemian father?
Well, I will say though, there are important touchstones that have to be met every day. You need to get dressed, you need to brush your teeth, you need to make your bed. Things like that need to happen.
So basic discipline,
Yes. And that's something my parents always had, where it's like, you need to do this, but then you have that time in between where you could, have some free time. I think that's it's a delicate balance, but it's an important one to have and become a real well-rounded individual.
Good advice for all the fathers to come. So you're fathers of many great wines. And Brian, so we have this new wine, which we're very proud of.
Yes.
So why don't you tell us all about it? Because this is, dear friends, something you've never seen before coming all the way from Mendocino County. And something we've been building from the estate at the Loach all the way out.
Yes. So, we started on this path with organics and biodynamics 15 years ago. Yes. And, it was part of the inspiration, I know, when your family first came to California to start this path. And we honestly, we've had some struggles along the way with our own estate vineyard, I'm sure you remember. After we had replanted, we lost almost a third of the site to frost. And there's nothing you can do with a situation like that. And so it was slow in coming, but I think we're getting to that point where we're starting to see some amazing wines come out because of that. So the first wines we made according to organic principles were the estate wines. And then shortly joined by wines like the Massoot Vineyard, the Mabaroshi Vineyard, and others. But this is our first that we're really going to be able to offer at a very available type of situation. This is coming from some great partner vineyards that we work with up in the Ukiah area, so center of Mendocino County. And what I love to do when I see these...
Is there anything else? Because when you think Ukiah, you think
Well, I mean, there's quite a bit of Sauvignon Blanc, but this, I know where you're going with that. No, John Charles, I think it's
we'll keep it
grapes.
A secret.
It's all grapes.
But it's 100% grapes.
It's all grapes. It might match with that, but that's a different topic.
Yeah.
what I love with this wine is we're working with a little bit of a warmer climate Chardonnay.
Beautiful.
That's not something to be ashamed of. It's something to celebrate because in California, with these little warmer interior valleys, we're able to get these kind of tropical notes starting to come out of these wines. The important thing to me is that you don't mask it with oak. And so this is stainless steel all the way. Just nice leesiness and texture coming out of that lees contact because we're able to keep the wine on its lees in those stainless tanks and then just having those tropical
Explain fruits. What are lees and why are they so important?
Well, lees are life. This is so...
That's the answer I was hoping you were going to say.
Yeah, it's why wine is alive, because it is the yeast. It is the what gives wine texture, what gives wine its transformational quality, not just the alcohol, but also all those mouth-filling textures and flavors yes. and feels that you get. And that's why wine is so much superior to basically any other alcohol, because of those lees, because of that content.
We heard it, purer than anything else. It's really grapes, sugar converted into a little bit of alcohol, but only 13%, so it's not a big deal. There's a lot of water in a bottle.
There's a lot of water in a bottle, and just it is that the life of the yeast that has been given up to make that bottle is what makes it so special. And it's something that all great winemakers try and capture within their wines. And I learned that from the first winemaker I really worked with, Greg LaFollette, back in 2004.
That's right.
And every winemaker I've worked with or talked to since then, you will find them always coming back to that. Well, what are you doing with the lees? How are you cultivating them? You know, when are you removing them? Because that's an important part as well. Winemakers are more editors than creators. So
it's a very interesting comparison. Editors rather than creators.
Yeah, the yeast are the creators. The yeast are the makers. The vineyard
right.
is the creator. The winemaker is the guy or
guides.
Girl or gal who is guiding that process. Yes.
So when... Love the idea of no oak. So Chablis techniques all the way?
Essentially, but we are in a warmer area than Chablis. So I love Chablis. I had a Chablis last night.
Yes,
Vacoupin 2015. That was beautiful.
Ooh, good choice.
Yeah. Worked well with Ceviche.
I love it. Why wasn't I invited?
Well, John
Well,
Charles,
next time, yes. I'll bring a Les Clos.
Ooh, I will take you up on that.
Because, you know, we're talking about Chablis, obviously Burgundy. And the soil is very unique. It's Kermarengen, so it's only oyster beds. So it's really layers and layers and gives that minerality
yeah.
that we cannot find anywhere else. But you're using the same technique, though.
The same techniques, yes. But we do have a little bit more tropical flavor
yeah.
to it. But our goal is to really coax out a sense of minerality.
Yeah.
And then that just that mouth-fillingness you get from that lees contact. And I think this is absolutely beautiful wine and would go with that ceviche we had last night.
So why... Why organic? And it's a big debate.
Yes.
We are believers, and I was a believer since the age of 7, when my grandmother really had me put compost on her roses. And we did pendulum energy. We did all kinds of things with them. And I realize, you know, this is the only way to go, but explain why in the wine world it's important.
Well, I think in all agriculture it's important. And I think if you talk to any farmer, even ones who are sustainable, when it gets down to their goals, it is to have a site that is farmed for generations. This is the terroir is their family. Mm-hmm. Their family is the terroir. And so organics is a way of allowing us to cultivate a site so it's healthy and long-term, not just a slash and burn type of agriculture. And that, I think, is the biggest thing struggle with in terms of talking to other folks is, you know, when you have someone who is farming in that kind of slash and burn type of mentality,
yeah.
It's upsetting. It's disgusting. It's so short-sighted and also detrimental to everyone who comes after them.
And everybody who lives around them.
Yes. And so organics is a way of making this not only better for, you know, an individual site, but better for time. And that's, I think, the most important thing that we can imprint is that we're not doing this just for today. We are doing this for generations.
And that's why
organics is important.
For sure. And we need to leave the earth in a better shape than we found it. And today, even more, it's accelerating. And there is climate change. There is obviously all of that happening, whether we want to acknowledge it or not. So Brian, explain.
Well, I want to go back to one thing, if you don't mind. With organics, you know, when we first started talking about organics with all the our neighbors around Deloche, this was, you know, a fairly conservative farming community at that point in time. And seeing this, you know, change happening at this estate vineyard right in the middle, I wouldn't say shocking, but was a bit of a, what are you guys doing? Having those conversations with these folks who want to farm for generations, and to start seeing them implement techniques of organic agriculture, even though they might not be certified, they're embracing the idea that these techniques help them preserve this land.
And you think you could convert them? How many did you convert?
We've converted about a half dozen all the way to certification. We've converted, I would say, 90% to a level where they are very, very close to certification.
Almost 70 growers, which is a record to be able to do. And I would say American farmers are great, and people in the viticultural world, if you show them why, as well that you're ready sometimes to pay a little more, and there's a little incentive, they're very excited to do it. Brian, in a nutshell, explain what is organic farming in terms of what we don't do.
Well, the major things we don't do is we don't use synthetic herbicides and pesticides. The number one chemical that I know is everyone's mind right now is Roundup, and that is something that is not in any of our wines that are farmed using organic practices. So that is, I think, one of the most important things to know is that organics is a list of things that you do not do. The other thing that's important with organic certification is that you're farming the site in a way that has a living soil. And so that you're cultivating that soil, whether or not you're adding compost, you're making sure that the soil itself is part of the ecosystem of the plant. It's not just a neutral medium. And that, I think, is why organic wines tend to have a bit more of that minerality, a bit more texture to them and interest, is because the soil has become a bigger part of it. Not as big as biodynamics, but definitely you start to see
the
that.
The soil is the art. It's where it all starts. The soil gives the taste and the flavor. The soil has a life cycle similar to us as human beings. The timeline, as Brian said, is a little longer, of course, but this is very important to take into account. You know, the best expression that I repeat all the time is the old Indian saying, take off your shoes and caress the skin of Mother Nature. And that is so powerful because in that sense, we really understand what we are given and what we offered. To that point, why biodynamic means so much to you?
Well, I think one of the things that attracts me to biodynamics is the fact that it is about multiple living systems interacting. Right. It's not just we're farming grapevines and that's all we're doing. It's no, we're the grapes are a major part of what we do. But we also have these insectary set aside so that we know that the beneficial insects have a place. We're leaving areas that allow the fungus in the soil itself to develop and hopefully become symbiotic with our grapevines and help them spread out and become more resistant to diseases and pests. And then also we're having those ruminants, we're having those cows or those sheep or goats on site. And having grown up raising those my whole life, it just seems so natural that they should be part of any farm. So all those aspects make biodynamics very special to me. But when we talk about the wines coming out of biodynamic vineyards, I think what ultimately I love about them is that so much of the emphasis of the plant, of the defenses of the plant, are what we as winemakers love to taste and look at.
That's right.
And so when we have a biodynamically farmed vineyard, we have one that has more flavor, we have one that has more texture, we have one that has more color. And for years, we used to just talk about this, right? It's like, I think so. Over the past 5 years, we've been studying this on a chemical level, looking at the flavor compounds, looking at the color compounds. And now we know in the same neighboring sites, planted to the same rootstocks and the same clones, biodynamically farmed vineyards within that same acre of land produce more color, they produce more flavor. And that to me is fantastic proof that biodynamics produces better wine. And I don't just need my data to show that. I think if you look at all the great wines of the world, you can see that all of them have embraced biodynamic techniques.
Which is amazing, as Brian is more of a scientist at first, you know, learn all the chemistry and the science. Often when you talk to, you know, people in the lab or biologists or enologists, they tend to go into the science side and they seem to you know, not take us seriously.
By get lost in the numbers.
And that's so cool to see within Brian. Brian, on that note, you know, it's very similar to homeopathy, of course, and it's very similar to, isn't it great to prevent thanks to biodynamic? Can you say that our vineyards look better and feel better today than ever before?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, when I first started working at Deloche, the vineyard was dying. And it wasn't that old of a vineyard. It was planted in the early 1970s. That's and right. I started in 2003. It was 30 years old, give or take. And the vines were dying. And the last year of production, we had less than, I think it was about 0.9 tons per acre or something like that. I mean, just incredibly small. And you walk through this site and the guys farming it were doing everything they had been taught to do. They were cultivating every row. They were, you know, pumping out the herbicides to make sure there was no, all the pre-emergent herbicides, make sure there's no weeds competing with those vines. They were pouring on the fungicides, make sure there was no rot within the vineyard itself. They were spraying insecticides in order to make sure that the little bugs that could, you know, cause leafhoppers and things like that weren't spreading within the vineyard, but it was still dying. And it wasn't because of AXR rootstock. It was dying because they had killed everything off except for the predators of the grapevine in that soil. Wow. And so all that was left were nematodes killing off our vines.
Amazing to see that green Napa Valley, green Sonoma, and the evolution we're going into that we've believed on and into for, you know, decades and decades now is finally coming to life again.
Well, to see that life come back to our own estate vineyard was amazing. And to see people who I don't think believed until they saw this rebirth happen was even better.
People are skeptic. When you show it to them and they see it, they really realize how important it is. Brian, yourself, what inspires you?
Well, you know, I think we kind of touched on it earlier. What inspires me when it comes to wine is making sure that I am producing a wine, making a wine, crafting a wine that my family, my children, my friends can come back to and go, Brian did this and I'm proud of this.
That's great. But what about what inspires outside of wine? That's where I was going.
What inspires outside
as of wine? As we cheer towards this next, why don't I give you a few seconds of thoughts?
Yes, John Charles, you always have the great questions.
Because I know you're a very curious man. I know maybe history.
Well, history, but I would say beauty. Ultimately, I want to craft things, and beauty takes many forms.
Yeah, that's right.
But, you know, and how you perceive beauty can be in a historical format, right? I mean, how does this look over time? But I would say that beauty at the end of the day, something that is something that brings pleasure, something that provokes thought, all those, I think, go into that concept of beauty.
So besides wine,
yes.
What is your passion?
Well, right now I have two little boys and my passion is very much subsumed in making sure they become two great men. So it's a lot of energy right now. It's a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old. But I love the ability to take them outdoors, whether it's on the family ranch and we're working with the animals, the cows in particular, or the chickens, or whether it's in our own backyard. And we're exploring what is in that dirt pile over there and what their imaginations take them. I would say that right now is my passion.
Well, this is great. This is very inspirational as well for all of us who have children who, during this period of time, could feel a little stressed sometimes. Does it ever happen to you?
Maybe once or twice. I will be honest, trying to find some activities to keep everyone going through this period of time right now has been a challenge when everyone is, things are restrained. You're not able to go on those adventures. But finding the adventures we can do.
That's right.
Is what's important.
And in many ways, we're lucky. We're here in Napa and Sonoma. We're not in the middle of a concrete city with two windows to look at all day.
Yes, exactly. And we can go on those nice bike rides or, you know, walk up a hillside and see something new. So
that's right.
Yeah.
So, Brian, the last one is really one of your top guns.
Well, yes, and also one of our most historic wines, at least in our era now.
That's right.
Yes, because this is the Green Valley of the Russian River.
Explain, what is the Green Valley to everyone?
Yeah, well, you know, the best way I like to explain is that if you're at Deloche and you're in our backyard and you're looking to the west, you're looking at the Green Valley. You're looking at our greater backyard.
Yes.
It is this western slice of the Russian River Valley. It was formed at right around the same time as the Russian River Appalachian. The folks out in this area really set out to define a very unique appellation at the time, because it was by a single soil type and a single valley system.
Oh.
So it's, I think, in many ways, one of California's few appellations that really follows that kind of Burgundian model, where people were really diving into the uniqueness of the soil and the terrain and using that as an appellation, as opposed to some other appellations that are just lines on a map.
So that's right.
With you and Greg LaFollette back in 2004, this was an area that we really became interested in, because mm-hmm. it was one of these very easy to define, already out there sub-appellations to start exploring. When I first started working at Deloche, we didn't have Greggs coming from the Green Valley. And we corrected that fairly shortly.
Yeah.
And it comes from three partner growers of ours that we've been working with, one of who we actually do the farming for, the Schlepp family. We farm for them and have taken it on as one of our estate vineyards. And then the Gioberti and the Swisegood vineyards, both fantastic sites. Two of the three are now farmed, certified organic. One is certified biodynamic as well.
Wow, very exciting. So we try and really a wine that really brings all the essence of Mother Nature.
Without a doubt. And I think that's what's become so famous for the Green Valley, is that it is one of those areas where the terroir speaks through the wine. And why so many people yeah. have sought it out. The soil profile is part of it, the climactic influences, but also these generational farmers. All of these sites have been farmed for years and years by people who care about the land and want to make sure that they're taking care of it, not just for their generation, but the generation.
The next one. So three words on this wine, because this is very eloquent, very charismatic. But three of your own words.
Well, I was going to use flavors, and I was going to say cherry, spice, and everything nice.
Mm-hmm. Why not? What else?
Very smooth, velvety.
Mm-hmm.
Just long, long finish. Beautiful wine.
So, Brian, tell us about the cultural influence of Burgundy into your style. Because, you know, everybody loves traveling. Everybody wants to experiment and experience other regions. You've obviously experienced it with me in a great deal, as well as Grégory and all our team in France. How does that benefit to you to have a cultural exchange as we have?
Well, I think, you know, it's been Burgundy from the very beginning of my wine life has been an inspiration. When I had that chance to do that European train tour, so to speak, Burgundy was one of those places I got
the
to
dream
explore.
Tour. Yes. You buy a ticket for one price and you can travel as much as you want for 6 weeks.
Pretty much. Yes. That's,
I wish we could go back to this time.
Yes. So Burgundy, you know, very early on, figuring out the differences, and as a poor, just out of college student, it was, you know,
yeah.
all right, I'm saving up to buy that bottle of Bourgogne, you know, and to get to taste of Volnay or get to taste of Pommard and try and tease out the difference was very exciting. From there, though, you know, getting a sense of, all right, this is all one grape.
Yes.
But so many different personalities, so many different aspects because mm-hmm. of the soil. That was the first step. And then working with people like John Charles, Greg, Dan Goldfield along the way, being able to define that further. But what really became interesting was collaborating with Gregory,
yes.
And the JCB number 3 in particular. And, you know, talking about the similarities in terms of what we're looking for.
And explain what number 3 is.
Well, it's the best of both
you
worlds.
You thought I was insane when I came to you on this one.
More than once.
But insanity is good, because Brian never say it's impossible. And I got to say, I admire so many great things in him, of course, and he has millions of qualities. But one of the things which I adore, and this is that American Californian trait of your personality, is to say, let's think about how we can make that happen. And that's what you said.
Yeah. And it was a process of failure at start, if you remember.
For sure,
you know?
For sure. And failing, we learn from it.
Yes.
Sometimes.
Sometimes. Hopefully.
I've done so many times the same mistake, so.
But, you know, starting to kind of coax out how he achieves certain wine styles.
Yes.
While different than what we're trying to achieve in California, really brought to me what I think the essence of Burgundy is, which is paying attention to the source. And then crafting and working with that source so that it presents itself as best as possible.
Yeah.
And not trying a uniform approach and just saying, well, we do everything the same, so everything can taste the same, but rather, well, this is coming out of a site that gets more solar exposure. And because of that, we're going to have a bigger tannin profile on that wine. And because of that, we're going to respond to it this way in the cellar and maybe actually try and reduce the amount of tannin so it's a little bit softer and silkier and isn't so overbearing. Or this is coming from a very, very cold site. And because of that, we needed a little bit gentler and longer fermentation.
So not being systematic.
Exactly.
I think that's so important. Listening to Mother Nature, tasting the wines.
And I think that's the core of Burgundy, is that because you have a viticultural area on the edge, you have to listen to each of these individual sites. Otherwise, you make bad wine.
So, Brian, a deep question now. We've done Crystal Energy at the Loge and obviously Buena Vista. We've done Sound Healing together and with our good friend Jeff Dawson. Do you feel the difference within the energy of the space as well as the quality of the grapes and the wine?
The energy of Deloge has dramatically changed over the time I've worked there. There's a light quality now. And I say a light quality.
I love it.
But yeah, well, I don't know how else to say it. It is a brighter place than when I first started. And I think you find this in different places in life. Often there will seem like there's a darkness or a cloud that hovers over it. And why did that change at Deloge? I can't explain other than the influences you've brought there.
Well, we've brought there all of us, which is important. So we'll talk a lot more in the future about Crystal Energy, about Sound Healing, about Pendulum Energy, about really analyzing a site in a very spiritual way as well. Because besides what we see, we all need to take into account the unseen. And this is very important. And this is all the great energy that Brian is bringing to this wine and to his wines in general. So Brian, we're the only Burgundian really in Sonoma. Mm-hmm. How does it feel to you? Are you feeling you're using a lot of the Burgundian techniques and making real California wines out?
Yeah, exactly. I think what it has done is given us a standpoint, a place to talk about our wines in terms of revealing terroirs. And one of the most important things I think we've been able to do at Deloge is, with this Burgundian heritage, take it and apply it to California in a way that isn't trying to make our wines Burgundy, but trying to show these neighborhoods, this part of the world, in that same lens. And that to me is awesome, because Sonoma County is that place. It is where what you do in Sebastopol is different than what's going on in Freestone or Occidental or in Forestville. And you have these people who have these parochial mindsets. And some people say, oh, no, that's bad. You should all try and get together. But I celebrate that. I want my neighborhoods to be
different. Do you feel we're making and crafting the map of the future?
Every day.
That's what is exciting, is we keep building, we keep creating. Last question, Brian, what is your dream?
What is my dream?
Besides seeing your boys obviously become great young men.
I want to craft a Clos Vougeot.
Ooh, well, that's a very feasible dream. So you want to craft it when we fly the grapes over, or you want to go there?
I'm not sure.
Well, we should try both.
Cheers.
I love it. And as you know, when we make number 3, we bring the barrels over on flight Air France 084. And this is very exciting because we fly with the wine. So what Brian is asking is totally feasible. And as you know, life takes us on both sides of the Atlantic. So you're welcome there anytime. Brian, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Great learnings, wonderful world of a great experience from youth to adolescence, to obviously a true Californian, to making it big in the wine world, because I want all of you to think and know that Brian is one of the best winemaker there is that California has ever seen. And as he said, it's only the beginning. We've only done the obvious. So Brian, to many years together, to your talent, and I really want to say to all of you, thank you for being with us and interested in the world of organic and biodynamic. Because remember, Bria Savarin said to us, tell us what you eat and I'll tell you who you are. What we say to you is, tell us what you drink and we'll tell you really who you are. Cheers.